Cheers, thank you. I'm presenting this talk on behalf of Philip Keane, who unfortunately couldn't be here to get today. I'd like to acknowledge our co-authors on the COUNT study and the HIV Prevention Partnership Project. Perhaps more importantly, I'd like to acknowledge all the gay and bisexual men who took part, particularly HIV-positive men, given we were asking people to provide biological samples. Without them, the research would not have happened. I'd like to acknowledge the peer recruiters led by Caitlin Banbridge at ACON, our community partners, and you can see many other people who were involved here. This was quite a complicated study, including support from clinical partners at Sydney Sexual Health Centre. Funding is from the NHMRC. There's no pharmaceutical funding for this research. So I'm going to give you an overview of results from the COUNT study, the second round. The first time we did this, and Jason, who is talking later, we worked on this together. It was a national, pretty much a national study of undiagnosed HIV among gay and bisexual men. It was the first time we tried to directly measure that. This is a follow-up which was tied to a New South Wales-based NHMRC partnership project where we wanted to see if undiagnosed HIV had changed over time in the context of the HIV strategies in New South Wales. We did this with a cross-sectional biobehavioural surveillance study. So this was basically asking participants in the Gay Community Periodic Survey in Sydney to give us biological samples for HIV antibody testing. We did this with an oral fluid sample collection device, which is non-invasive and could be used safely in the field. The samples were tested at the National Reference Laboratory, and we matched the behavioural data that was collected in the questionnaire with participants' self-reported HIV status and status confirmed by testing. Our aim was primarily to look at the prevalence of undiagnosed HIV over time, but also to describe the characteristics of men with undiagnosed HIV, if possible. Key features, I can't describe the method in detail, but key features was consistent with international guidelines, we gave participants the option of getting their HIV test results. Sometimes these studies in the past have been done anonymously, but people could choose to participate anonymously if they wanted to, which meant that they didn't provide any contact details and they didn't get their test results. If they did provide their test results, we primarily provided results by text message, which, as you know, is now increasingly common, and we called participants where we suspected they might have undiagnosed HIV or if they had indeterminate results to connect them to care for confirmatory blood testing. I should note, and this does affect the interpretation of the findings, we actually had a lot of much more difficulty. This is quite a challenging study to do, as Jason will attest. He probably has grey hairs from the last time. We actually noticed how much more difficult it was to recruit last year. So we did it in 2014, and this most recent round was at the beginning of last year. We have an ongoing issue with this study where it is a big ask for HIV-positive men to take part. You know, they're literally just doing it for altruism, and it potentially is quite risky for them to kind of participate in the study. So that was a challenge we knew going in. The massive increase in HIV testing and PrEP use in the Sydney area meant that many negative men saw limited benefit, or they thought they were wasting study resources by taking part. We're going, no, please take part. And that slowed recruitment down. And we also knew that we would need very large numbers to accurately estimate undiagnosed HIV, given in the previous round, which I'll just show you, we already knew it was quite low. And it's a very complicated procedure, recruitment procedure with lots of labelling and matching of samples and so on, which makes field recruitment a nightmare. Okay. So just getting into who we actually got. Back in 2014, we had over 900 men. Reflecting the difficulties with recruitment, we had just under 900 men last year. Most of the participants believed they were HIV negative, as you would expect. One thing to note, we had a big jump last year in men who chose not to get their test results for the reasons I've outlined. We also had to extend recruitment, so we recruited more people from gay bars and sex venues last year. But coverage of the periodic survey sample, we had about the same in both rounds, so about half the eligible participants took part. Looking at demographics, there were some changes between the rounds. We actually recruited more overseas-born men last year, which there's a lot of focus on at the moment, although not particularly more men from Asia, and fewer Anglo-Australian men. Looking at risk behaviour and sex and drug use, one of the notable things, and this just reflects the general trends in the periodic surveys anyway, many more men reported condomless sex with casual partners and a few more reported group sex. Most of the other indicators were fairly similar. And in terms of testing history and PEP and PrEP use, there were some big changes here where the sample was much more likely to be recently tested, much more likely to be recently diagnosed with an STI, and a lot more likely to report current PrEP use. And most of the PrEP users who took part last year chose to participate anonymously and not get their results because obviously they were being tested quarterly anyway. In summary, there are some things in the 2018 sample which suggest the sample in some ways was high risk, and other ones such as PrEP use and increased testing which would suggest that they were actually safer. So those things should be borne in mind looking at the results. Okay, so this is fairly complicated, an epidemiologist's wet dream. Here are the prevalence results with all the confidence intervals and the numerators. I'll try and step you through it so you know the headline message. The main thing to note is that most of the... So this shows the results based on testing after all the work done by the NRL. As you would expect, the vast majority of the sample was confirmed as HIV negative, so that includes all the people who didn't know their status. So not much change there. You'll see on the right-hand side there's no statistically significant change between the two rounds for any of these indicators, so I won't mention that again. For those of you who like estimates, you can see the confidence intervals. Kind of in the important cases, you can see that the number of men who were confirmed as HIV positive, we had fewer men who were previously diagnosed in 2018 than in 2014, as we kind of expected. And so the overall prevalence fell slightly from 6 to 5%. The previously undiagnosed cases, you can see that we had only seven in 2014, and we had only four in 2018. So that looks like a reduction. It's not statistically significant because you can see the very small numbers there. What does this mean for the estimates of undiagnosed HIV? Well, the traditional way of reporting this is over the total number of HIV positive cases in the sample. So that tends to be the way it's reported internationally. So back in 2014, our estimate was 10.8% of all HIV positive men were undiagnosed in Sydney. And in 2018, that fell slightly to 8.1%. The other way we're thinking that might be more accurate, given the challenges of encouraging previously diagnosed men to take part, is over the total number of people who believed they were negative and untested when they went into the study. So you can see that's the bottom row. And so in 2014, 0.8%, or one in 100 men who believed they were negative or untested when they took part in the study actually had undiagnosed HIV, and that fell to one in 200 or 0.4% in 2018. Again, the study was not sufficiently powered to show whether that was statistically different because the confidence intervals overlap, particularly with such low prevalence. Okay. Because we knew that there were some, as I mentioned at the beginning, there were some changes according to sampling, particularly where we recruited men from, we adjusted the estimates based on where we recruited from, which I can't, for the actual moment, I can't actually explain easily how we did that, but we weighted the sample based on where we recruited from, which evens out some of the differences. And you can actually see that here in these adjusted estimates, particularly it actually evened out the actual prevalence of HIV, which became stable over time, which you would actually expect if you were kind of randomly sampling from the community. So that stabilised HIV overall at 6%, which is probably about right. Then if you look down at the bottom, how did it affect the estimates of undiagnosed HIV? So you still wouldn't expect there to be a statistically significant difference because it can't perform magic. But you can see that it actually shows a wider contrast. So it suggests that actual undiagnosed HIV was 17.8% in 2014, falling to 5% last year, and you can see the alternative way of reporting there as well. So, you know, this is a stronger suggestion that maybe undiagnosed HIV has actually fallen. Okay, so let's put this result in context. So this is a plot of all the previous studies that were done in Australia on undiagnosed HIV. The oldest one was done in Brisbane and other parts of Queensland. And so the two high ones that stand out are the Brisbane study and the Melbourne Suck It In C study, which found suggested 20 to 30% undiagnosed, which freaked everybody out. But that's over 10 years ago. The COUNT study results, which you can see on the right-hand side, showing Melbourne, the national overall, suggested a much lower level of undiagnosed HIV, which was kind of heartening. And you can see the Sydney recent result. I mean, it's slightly lower than the Sydney result in 2014, but it's not a significant difference. It also shows you the challenge. I think we estimated we would have needed to recruit 10,000 men to actually show a statistic in both rounds to show a statistically significant change at that kind of prevalence. So it's low. It might be falling. We're not sure. We hope it is. Okay. So in conclusion, we found it was challenging to do this type of study in the context of increased HIV testing and PrEP use, and I think I can vouch for Philip that we have no appetite to do this again anytime soon unless you give us an enormous amount of money. And I'm pretty sure Caitlin would say the same from ACON. The sample was more venue-based, sexually active, more tested on PrEP. We found that undiagnosed HIV fell, which we think is probably plausible, but it wasn't a statistically significant change. You know, we're hoping that continued activity, particularly around PrEP and testing, means that it should be falling further. However, as I've noted, it wasn't possible to show a statistically significant change over time, and I think Mark Stuvey, one of our collaborators, isn't sure that this is the right way to estimate undiagnosed HIV anymore. Sampling variation may have affected the results, thus we offered a reanalysis with weighted results. And as you'll know, I have not talked about the characteristics of undiagnosed cases here because there are only four in the most recent round, and it would be difficult to identify risk factors with certainty, but we are due to publish those, hopefully later this year. Thanks.